Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Hover. Finding the perfect domain name is incredibly easy with Hover. Go to hover.com/twit and save 10% off your first purchase.
NASA's mission to fly into the sun, picking the perfect laptop for a student and overclocking your PC. Live from the Twit East Side Studios in beautiful Petaluma is the new screensavers.
And thanks to Paolo from Varese, Italy. Mm-hmm. He's one of a large group of, largish group of students visiting. When I say large group, you probably shouldn't show them on camera because that gives away the fact that they're, in fact, not a large group, but a small group of wonderful students visiting the States. They're from a group called Coding, and they're learning about coding. They're all 14-year-old students. It's really nice to have you all, except for Paolo, who's 17. Yeah.
Eng stands for English also, right? You're learning English, not engineering.
Practice your English. Oh, code Eng, English. Oh, this is Megan Maroney.
Oh, yes.
Hi, Megan. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Thank you for filling in. Ian Thompson was scheduled, but he came out with a flu, bad flu. Mm-hmm. So I'm thrilled that you could do this.
Plus, you needed someone with an Italian last name to come and make you guys.
Maroney. Mm-hmm. Plus, you have a very tough problem.
I do. I have a sticky wicket, as they call it.
You have a daughter going into high school in the fall, and she needs a computer.
She does.
And we have lined up a lot of computers. We've got everybody in the office to bring their computer, and we've lined them up to help you choose, not just Megan, but everybody, choose the right computer for a child entering high school.
Yes.
Or college. It could be college
or high school. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Also coming up, we're going to talk to Nikki Fox. She is a project scientist for something very cool, the Parker Solar Probe. Believe it or not, they are planning to crash a probe into the sun. Intentionally, we'll talk about why they would do that and what they're going to learn about that. Brian Burnett will come by and show us how to overclock the CPU on his PC. And I am going to offer my voice services to you for use in Waze. We'll show you how you can use your own voice in Waze. All coming up in just a second. But first, the news of the week. There was a lot of it. I know you spent all of TNT this past week doing earnings reports.
There were a lot of earnings reports. Yeah. There was Microsoft. There were
Netflix.
Netflix, yes.
I'm trying to remember. A lot of companies.
And there's more next week, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot
it's
more next
season.
Week. It's the season. Yeah, it is the season. Yeah, and I don't, like, the numbers really don't matter to me. It's how the story behind the numbers.
Yeah, because we're not a financial network. No. You can watch CNBC or whatever for that, Fox Business News. We're really talking about technology from the point of view of users. So, that's relevant. If Microsoft, for instance, as they did, announced that they made more money for the first time ever on the subscriptions to Microsoft Office than selling the boxes of Microsoft Office, that's a story for us because it means it's changing the way people buy software.
Right.
Right. In fact, if you think about it, when's the last time you went into a computer store and bought a box of software? That seems kind of old-fashioned. I bet none of these kids ever bought a box of software, right?
What's in the box?
What's in the box? Nothing. It's that you download it, you just get a license key. That was that. Towards the end, that's what you would get in the box.
Right, but they're competing with Amazon, which now we're in this weird position where, like Microsoft is sort of the little guy in this cloud fight.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, so we're rooting for Microsoft to catch up to Amazon.
Amazon is still number one. Amazon Web Service, by the way, a sponsor of some of our shows, is number one, and Microsoft, though, doing very well in Azure and cloud. I can't really say almost as big. They're one-fifth the size of Amazon Web Services, we think.
But catching up fast.
They're catching up. They're getting bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, Amazon, I was playing with this. Have you played a little bit with these new Amazon?
No, I don't want to play with anything else that gives me more access to buy things from Amazon. I have four Echo Dots. I have Show. I can't. I have to stop spending money just because there's a cool app.
So I don't know. They don't really expose this in a way that's easy to find. But if you know what you're looking for, if you go to the Amazon shopping app and then go to the menu, that hamburger menu over here, there's something called programs and features, which is actually a term from Windows control panel, isn't it? In this case, they're just kind of weird little doohickeys that Amazon is offering, including Amazon Spark. They announced that this week. This is like Instagram, but only for stuff you just bought and want to tell other people how to buy it. And, of course, where do you buy it? I slided up the wrong thing. Where do you buy it? You buy it on Amazon, right? So, and it's so hard to get to. I'm amazed that anybody has put anything on here.
Yeah, there's a lot of people.
Although I wouldn't mind
shopping.
Buying those pops, cookie dough ice
pops. Are they for sale, or is it like a mold you can buy to make them?
Well, that's what's funny. I mean, some of these things are just tips. Like, I love packing snack boxes. Oh, reusable boxes and cups. So maybe they are selling stuff. I'm not really clear who's posting here.
Yeah, why would you do that? Do you get like a cut of the...
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
There's another one I found. I love this, the treasure truck. Mm. Do you know about that?
I have taught my children, and I was taught never to buy things off of
the back of a truck.
And never to buy anything from a truck that's offering free candy. And the treasure truck does both.
Yeah.
They offer free candy. They encourage you to buy things off the back of the truck.
It's really a truck. It's basically Woot on wheels.
Yes.
So they only sell one thing, and it's like an amazing deal, they say. They're not in town, but they told me they come to my town.
Well, they're not really going on a road trip. They're actually going to go to a lot of different places. That was the news this week. They're going to go and park in a lot of places.
Good.
I'm guessing if the Whole Foods deal goes through, they'll maybe park in the parking lot of a Whole Foods.
That'd be cool.
I think it's just another way, like I said, another way to get you to buy more things from Amazon.
Yeah.
I truly believe that there will come a time in our lifetime where we buy everything from Amazon.
That's the plan. And I, for one, welcome our new overlords from Amazon.
No.
I'm excited. I'll buy anything. I don't mind. I like buying stuff from Amazon.
But don't you like going to the bookstore? Don't you like going to Copperfields?
I go to Copperfields to look for a book, and when I find it, I order it on Amazon. Isn't that what you do?
No. I said that sometimes I do that with chairs. Like, I'll take a picture, and then someone accused me of
showrooming.
Of stealing. That's stealing.
It's showrooming. And it is, in fact... In the old Judaic code, the Talmud says I'm not kidding you, it's the shopkeeper's law. You're not supposed to go into a shop, get all the information about what to buy, and then go buy it from somebody else. So it's apparently been a problem for thousands of years. You broke the Talmud. Here's another one. This is Outfit Compare. This is a preview of what they're going to do with the Amazon Look, right? That's the one where you put it in your closet. Mm-hmm. There's a camera, and then you show it outfits. So I gave it an outfit, and I said... Which I gave it two outfits. You give it two outfits, and you say, which one do you like better? Okay, so I think this was a nice one. That was at work on Wednesday. I was wearing a black jacket with black and white looks good on guys, right? Because we have no color sense. And black slacks, black loafers. And then I thought, well, this will be easy one for it. I posted a picture of me in my safari outfit from our vacation. It liked the safari outfit. Can we do one with you?
Yes.
Actually, well, let's do one with you and me.
Okay. And we should compare it to the last time I was on.
Which outfit looks better on
you? Oh, my outfit or your outfit?
Okay, take a photo. I don't know if it's going to be smart enough to know that that's you. So there's a photo of you. Now you use that photo. You take a photo, add second outfit of me.
Okay.
Let's see how this works.
Okay. You got to have the same pose.
No, come around. You got to get my shoes.
You
got to
have the same pose. Wait, take a photo. Okay.
Got to get the shoes and the whole...
All right, ready? Okay.
Now,
oh, you look great.
Do you think it'll know that this is two different people?
No, I think we look enough alike that it will...
Okay. Now we're going to compare. You ready? So, when they released the look...
I like that. You don't have the leg out pose.
They said, right. No, I think I'm going to win. When they released the look, they said that this would be a combination of artificial intelligence and humans. So I think when we send it over, it says in progress. I think a human's going to look at that as well as artificial intelligence.
So we're not going to get it back right now.
Now, you understand the real goal here is to get you to buy outfits on Amazon.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, what'll happen is it'll say, well, you looked okay in that, but if you like that, I got something else for you.
It should take into account the context.
Oh, it said we could not complete your outfit comparison.
Oh,
I think it knew that it wasn't, that we were different people.
It might have known.
Wow.
Yeah.
Make sure. Oh! Make sure both your images are of the same person.
What?
You too smart. Amazon.
Artificial intelligence is
we
getting
couldn't
very
fool
smart.
You.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to do one more.
Okay.
This time, I know we're wasting a lot of time. I'm going to do you, and I'm going to get Colleen to go over there.
Oh.
Because maybe it just knew that that was a man and a woman.
We
so what if we have
dress
two
on,
women?
Essentially.
You're wearing the same dress, which would make it. Come on, Colleen.
Okay.
You have to come over here. She's really shy. She doesn't want to do that. All right. I bet this will fool it. Okay, we're going to add another outfit of Colleen.
Yeah, leg out.
Add a second outfit.
Little hip in there.
Yeah. You ready? Okay. Second outfit. There you go. All right. See, I think it will. You're both
right.
But actually, now it's
like,
going to say
scoop neck.
You need to wear different outfits.
Yeah, you do. You do. I've
say,
been sharing.
What
a
are you trying to trick
long.
Me again, Laporte? All right. Well, we'll let it chew on that and see what happens. Mm-hmm. What else is in the news? Oh, Elon Musk.
Always in the news.
Elon Musk joining Stephen Hawking. The astronomer royal and saying we've got to make laws now. Artificial intelligence, any minute. And I think Elon's watched a few too many Terminator movies. He says it's the greatest risk we face as civilization. Well, I love this because TechCrunch, Connie Loizos, went and talked to a guy who really knows about robots and artificial intelligence, Rodney Brooks. He's the founding director of MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Lab, co-founder of iRobot, they make those Roombas, right, and Rethink Robotics. I mean, this guy is a roboticist. So I like it because Connie said, I have to ask you, Elon expressed again this past weekend that AI is an existential threat to humankind. Agree, disagree. And Rodney said this. It was a mic drop moment. There are quite a few people out there who said that AI is an existential threat. He mentioned Stephen Hawking. There's one common thread with all of these people. They don't work in AI themselves. For those who work in AI, we know how hard it is to get anything to actually work. It's hard. The reason that people like Elon make a mistake is they look at something like AlphaGo, the Google machine that beat the Go champion. And they think it's thinking. They look at it, they go, oh, it's really smart. He said, but if you talk to the AlphaGo people, they say, this thing's stupid. It's a box of rocks. It does one thing, play Go, and can't do anything else. And even the Go is touch and go. He said, oh, my God, this machine is so smart. It could do just about anything. But I was at DeepMind in London about 3 weeks ago, and they admitted things could have gone very wrong. So he says, you can't regulate. If you're going to regulate now, this guy is a big thinker. If you're going to have a regulation now, either it applies to something and changes something in the world, right? Or it doesn't apply to anything. If it doesn't apply to anything, what the hell do you have the regulation for? What behavior do you want to change, Elon, right? By the way, let's talk about, and this is the mic drop moment, let's talk about regulation on self-driving Teslas, because that's a real issue. All right, so enough said. I'm not going to worry anymore. Rodney says the machines aren't coming for us.
I think that we don't have to be afraid, but I think we need to be mindful. I mean, the idea of artificial intelligence, right? The idea behind it
right.
is it's not just learning a thing. It's then teaching itself how to do other things. That's what it is. Like, that's what artificial intelligence
is. But I think what Brooks is saying is when that happens, then we should talk about it. But it's a lot farther off than you and I imagine.
Right. I mean, humans are very complicated. But I think it's something to say that learning chess is different than learning Go. There are so many different moves and
emotions.
That's
two different computers, though, right?
True.
So one could do one could do the other, neither could do both.
Right. No, don't get me wrong. I think Elon Musk just says whatever comes into his mind. He has no filter.
He thinks we're living in a simulation.
Right.
He thinks we're living in a game.
He thinks he's going to get us from D.C. to New York in 30 minutes.
In a pneumatic tube.
Yeah, under the ground.
By the way, he tweeted for some reason, and we don't know what this means, that he had government approval.
Right. He said verbal approval.
From what Donald Trump said, hey, Elon, huge. It's wonderful. Go do it.
Well, he probably did. The White House said they had some good conversations. But, like, people that were working on the ground in the, like, Department of Transportation. Well, the Department of Transportation said they had conversations. But the people in New York, I think it was one of representative in New York, said, we didn't talk to anybody. He didn't talk to us. I have no idea what he's talking about.
First of all, Elon's not creating a Hyperloop company anyway. And if you actually put a human in that, his brains, we talked about this last week, would splat against the back of the Hyperloop. So there's some issues that have to be solved. I'm sure the government said, yeah, keep working on that, Elon. Get back to us.
There's certain people that want to turn to jelly.
If he has... Really? Who?
I've said there's certain people that the government probably wants to turn to jelly.
Oh, we know who we can put in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think he needs government approval for the boring machine, the company that's boring holes under L.A. That, I think you should get government approval.
Well, that's the boring company is the same one he was talking about. But this is East Coast boring company.
But Hyperloop is different than boring. It's not?
They're boring the hole for the Hyperloop. The boring company. They all have separate. It's like separate from Tesla, separate from Solar City, and yes. But it's
Elon... Okay, I don't know. Elon's never done a company for Hyperloop. He just talked about it and said, let other people do this. He is doing the boring company,
yes.
But the purpose is for cars to drive underground. Right?
No, I think it's tubes.
Okay.
I have verbal another approval thing, that we can go on to the next story.
Another thing we don't have to worry about for a little while, I'm sure. Let's talk about something actually that isn't coming up right away, but it's coming up pretty soon. In just a second, we're going to talk about going to the sun, the first ever NASA mission to actually physically contact the sun. Nikki Fox will join us in just a second from NASA. But first, let's talk Hover.com. Our sponsor today is the place I go whenever I want to register a domain name. What's the weirdest domain name you own? Do you own any weird ones?
I own goatswearingclothes.com.
See? Everybody does. Everybody. Do you have a weird one?
I don't.
No? I have... fancypants.com.
Oh, you do? How much you want for fancypants?
I have another one, tunictime.com. I was thinking maybe we could sell fancy pants and tunics.
To goats.
I'm waiting for this all to work the details out. I'm sure with hover.com, you may have a funny name or two. You might have a real name, too, like the domain name we use for twit.tv. Where is that registered? Hover.com. Hover has over 400 domain names extensions. So there's .com and .net, but there's also .tv and .am, .fm, and weird ones. Like I love these, like .design. And dot tech. Look at all of these. Dot pizza. Do you have Megan.pizza?
Yes, I do. Don't go by it.
I think Hyperloop.pizza would be really awesome.
Yes.
Dot hospital. Dot lawyer. Dot LTD. I can go on and on. There are 400 of these. Dot horse. Dot horse. Dot horse. Elon. Dot horse. Once you find your domain, Hover Connect will help you set up it automatically with almost all the websites. You know, our sponsor, WordPress, it was so easy. I can go on and on. And they have a just punch button that just does it for you. And what's nice about Hover, they just do, there's a whole bunch of them. What's nice about Hover is they just do domain names and email, and that's it. So you don't get a big upseller. Would you like to do hosting with us? Would you like to get Whois privacy? Some of these domain name registrars, it takes pages before you could check out. Well, for instance, you get Whois automatically. They know you want it, so they eligible domains include Whois privacy as part of the price. And I love this, because I have about 40 domain names now at Hover. With volume discounts, the more domain names you own at Hover.com, the more of a discount Hover will apply to your account. And they'll do that automatically. I love Hover. And if you ever need a hand, you don't have to dig through articles or FAQs. They have a great support team that is famous for their support. You call that number, you will not get put on hold. There's no annoying phone tree. They will stay on the line until they fix it, till they get it done. The best customer support in the business. Find a domain name for your idea. I tell everybody, if you're doing email, you shouldn't be at Gmail or at Hotmail or at Outlook or at Yahoo. You should have your own. You should have Maroni.net or whatever, Maroni.mail, and you should have it forwarded from Gmail so that if you change, you know, your email provider, you don't have to change your email address. Go through Hover. It's just the way to do it. Hover.com/twit. Get 10% off your first purchase right now at hover.com/twit. We thank them so much for making the new screensavers possible. Let's go to the Skype and visit. We're going to go to Baltimore, your old stomping grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikki Fox is on the line. She's the project scientist for the Parker Solar Probe. She's at Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory. Hi, Nikki. Welcome.
Hi.
Great to talk to you. This is crazy. You're going to build this nice, fancy satellite and then crash it into the sun?
No, not exactly. Oh. The object of the game is not to crash it into the sun.
Oh, so you're just going to skip by?
Well, how do you crash something in the sun? It's not solid, right?
No, there's no solid surface, but if you get close enough to it, it would burn up, and that would be it, really. Well before it ever got near the non-surface, it would burn up.
So you're going to go into the corona? How close to the sun are you going to get?
So we get to, at our closest approach, just under 4 million miles, which I know doesn't sound particularly close when you put it like that, but the Earth and the sun are 93 million miles apart. So it's about 4% of the distance.
Wow.
So we're going to be right up in there. You know, if you think of the Earth to sun as a big football field, we'd be on the 4-yard line knocking on the door for the touchdown.
Is it pretty hot there? I imagine there's a lot of solar radiation at least.
It's extremely hot, yes. The corona itself is about 2 million degrees, and that is where we are going to be living and working.
What? Won't it melt?
So hopefully not, no. So even though it's 2 million degrees, that's the temperature of the plasma itself. It's not very dense, and so the amount of heat that actually comes into our heat shield is only about, well, I say only about 1,400 degrees Celsius or 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit.
Nothing!
Think of it a bit like if you put your hand inside the oven temperature you know is like 400 degrees, but you can put your hand in there as long as you don't actually touch anything.
Right.
So we're moving very, very fast. We'll be the fastest man-made object ever. We'll be moving at about 450,000 miles an hour, or just under 118 miles a second.
Wow. How do you get going that fast?
We launch on an enormous launch vehicle. We go up on the Delta IV Heavy, which is currently the largest launch vehicle that NASA has at its disposal. And we also have a third stage. At the beginning of that little video that you're showing, you actually saw the fairing, the bit that rides us into space. It opened,
yes,
and the spacecraft came out, and there was actually a third stage motor on it, and it really does accelerate the spacecraft just that extra bit. So we're moving incredibly, incredibly fast, because we have to get away from the Earth's momentum. We need to be out in the space to do our job.
Amazing.
So I read that you're doing a lot of this to protect future astronauts. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So everything that happens, you know, happens kind of in this coronal region. And we've learned an awful lot about the corona by observing it, and, you know, doing tremendous research. But until you actually go up and visit it, you really can't tell exactly what's going on. So it's a little bit like looking out the window. You can see, you know, that maybe the sun is shining, but you have no idea how hot it actually is until you go outside into the atmosphere and really experience it. So, you know, the corona is the birthplace of the solar wind, and that's basically the sun's atmosphere that gets superheated in the corona and accelerated. So it moves about a million miles an hour away from the sun. It bathes all of the planets, and it carries with it the sun's magnetic field. The Earth has a magnetic field that we all know and we rely on so that we stay here on Earth. And these two magnetic fields can actually interact, and that allows a lot of energy to come into our magnetic environment, or our magnetosphere, as we call it. And that can cause auroras. It can also cause the Van Allen radiation belts to pump up, where a lot of spacecraft live and work. And of course, there are astronauts out on the space station. We want to keep them very safe. So being able to be predicting what is happening in the corona and what therefore is going to impact the Earth, we can kind of predict what the effects of, we call it space weather, but we're going to, we can predict that space weather here on Earth.
Do you get a lot of Icarus jokes, Nikki?
Flying too close to the sun?
Yes.
I'm guessing the heat shield's not made of wax.
No. Funny you should mention that. So one of the things that that's amazing about this mission is it really is 60 years in the making. It was first proposed in 1958, so it actually does predate NASA. There was a committee that got together, and they were asked to provide kind of guidance and advice for the newly forming agencies, so NASA, the National Science Foundation, and the Department of Defense. You know, what do we want to do with space? What are these really amazing things that we want to do? And they had 12 missions that were proposed, and of those 12, the other 11 have all flown. Solar Probe is the only one that hasn't, and that's purely because we've never had the technology to be able to sort of make our dreams come true. And, and you know, I know you're going to be talking about your iPads and everything in a minute, but the sort of the leap that it's taken in technology is 60 years ago, we were using a rotary phone that was attached to the wall. And, you know, if you wanted to go anywhere, you needed a really long cord on it. Now we use an iPhone 7 and it just, you know, tells you everything you want to know on this little tiny piece of technology. And that's the kind of leap that we needed to be able to do this mission, mostly to design the materials. So not wax, but not far off. It's carbon. It's actually a carbon-carbon composite the heat shield is made from. But it took years to develop and to really come up with something that was durable, that would be able to withstand the incredible heat. Also, the cool, if you look at that orbit plot that's showing there, it's a very elliptical orbit. So we go incredibly close to the sun on one side and then out around Venus on the other side. So, you know, it's got big temperature swings. And it also needs to be really, really light because I mentioned we have to be moving incredibly fast. So when, you know, if you want to be moving fast, you need to be light so that when that launch vehicle kicks you out of the atmosphere, it's kicking you out at a really fast speed. So you need to be light. And so that's that was the biggest technology development for us is our, we call it the giant frisbee. It's like an 8-foot frisbee that sits on the front of the sun. It's so good that the front side of it, as I mentioned, is 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. But the instruments on the main body of the spacecraft are actually just room temperature. It's kind of a warm day for them.
Wow, that's really
and
remarkable.
So I'm going to actually show you. So this is a Lego model that my son built for me, and it is Parker Solar Probe,
that's
as
so
seen
cool.
by he was then seven.
Wow.
But here is the heat shield. So that's always facing the object of the game is to keep the heat shield between us and the sun at all times, so that the instruments on the back here will remain nice and cool, operating just as they would do in a lab here on Earth.
So you're launching next year. What's the timeline? How long does it take to get there, and how long will it be there?
So, yes, we launch. Our launch window opens July 31st, 2018.
1 year.
Yep. Yes, just coming up. It's a little scary when I think of that. But yes, it's coming up. So it's a 7-year mission, just under 7 years. So we do 24 orbits of the sun. We'll get tremendous data. We do 7 Venus flybys. So we do gravity assists with Venus. A little bit different. Normally when you hear people say we're doing gravity assists, they actually want to take energy from the planet and speed up. We actually are generously donating energy to Venus, and it's actually slowing us down a little bit so we can gradually fall closer and closer into the sun. So we're moving incredibly fast. It's a bit like surfing around the sun in the same way that you don't fall into the ocean. If you're surfing nice and fast, that's what we'll be doing. We're going to surf the solar wind all the way around. So it's an exciting mission.
Wow, no kidding.
That is amazing.
7-year mission to boldly go where no probe has gone before.
To surf the solar wind.
Surf the solar wind, yeah.
Why Parker? Is there a person named Parker? Why is it called the Parker Solar Probe?
There is, actually. It's a historic event just being called Parker right now because it's the first time NASA has ever named a mission after somebody during their lifetime. It's extremely rare to even have a mission named after you, but to have it done during your lifetime is a first off. And he really wrote the seminal work. He was the one who realized there are mysteries in the solar wind, and he came up with some ideas for why maybe these mysteries were as they are. And the two main mysteries, of course, are the corona. We mentioned that's at 2 million degrees. That's actually hotter than the surface, what we call the visible surface, the photosphere of the sun, which is at about 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And so just it doesn't make sense. You know, you've got a heat source, it should get cooler as you move further away, but for the sun, it actually gets hotter. So the corona is hotter than the surface. And in this region where it suddenly gets to its maximum temperature, it suddenly gets energized, and that's what the solar wind is, and that's how it's able to escape the giant gravity of the sun and move out and bathe all of the planets. And he came up with a very seminal work in 1958 that really was the reason that people said, hey, we need to go study this. We need to go up and touch the sun.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of people will get to at least look at the sun in a few weeks with the total solar eclipse that's going right across the United States. I understand NASA has an eclipse kit and something, an assignment for people.
Yes, that's right.
Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So it's actually the first time in nearly 100 years that we've had a total solar eclipse that's going to go coast to coast for us here in the U.S. So NASA has many sites all along the path of totality. They have a lot of activities and things that are going on. But they're also inviting you to basically take images of the eclipse as you're seeing it. Take movies, take images, take all kinds of, you know, different cool filters that you can put on, and then you can upload it to this Eclipse app, and they actually want to use it for scientific research. Right. You know, the more views we have, the more exciting it is. So yes, get out, make sure you're wearing your protective eyewear, never look directly at the sun, wear the eclipse glasses, which you can also get from the NASA eclipse site. They'll send you an eclipse kit, and you have your glasses, and you can go out and pray that it's not cloudy and see an unbelievable celestial, kind of once in a lifetime sight.
Are you going to make that trip, Nikki? I guess you'll have to go south a little bit to go see it.
Yes, I'm actually going to Nebraska. I'm going to be on NASA TV from Homestead National Park. It's going to be exciting. My first ever solar eclipse. I've never seen one. I've always been the person that gets to stay home and sit in the TV studio. So now it's my time, and I'm going to go and see the eclipse.
I hope you bring your son as well.
Oh, absolutely. Both children, son and daughter.
Something that you never forget. I remember seeing one as a kid, and then we went to Australia to Cairns to see the last one a few years ago in its totality, and it's really a remarkable and kind of a spooky thing. I know you're a scientist, you understand what's going on. I understood what was going on, but it's a little weird when the lights go out in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
It'll be a lot of fun. Nikki, a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nicola J. Fox is project scientist for the Parker Solar Probe, launching next summer, about a year from now, on its way, a 7-year mission to visit the sun and the corona of the sun.
That's amazing.
That is very, very cool.
It's hot.
I heard. It's hot. We're going to send Megan on a mission. She's on a mission to find the right laptop for her high school-bound daughter. And we've got a lot of data and a lot of laptops, and we're going to see if we can help you make that choice. You still haven't purchased it, right?
Nope, not yet.
In fact, you were ready to put... I feel like you were ready to...
I was ready, but then I had a last-minute change of heart.
Ah, there's a lot of people out there with the same question. We'll talk about the pros and cons. I don't know if we can say one laptop that's right for everybody, but the pros and cons of a bunch of different laptops in just a moment. First, though, I'm going to show you... Actually, Jason's going to show you how you can use your voice for Waze, the navigation app. Watch.
I don't know about you, but I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired of the stupid navigation voice on my Android phone. It's all googly and bland and sometimes a little robotic. Look, I know someone who can do it just right. And that someone, it's me. Because why wouldn't I want to hear myself tell me where to go while I'm driving? I listen to the inner voice all the time. I might as well listen to it while I'm set to make a U-turn. And Waze has a feature on Android and, as of this week, on iOS that allows anyone to record all the voice prompts required to navigate with whatever voice they choose. It's super easy, too. You open the Waze app, you just tap the settings, then voice directions, and then you can tap on the record new voice button. And now, as you can see here, there's a huge list of voice prompts to record. Each voice prompt is accompanied by the time limit for that specific recording. You just tap the selection, hit the record button, do your business however you like.
All set. Let's go.
And then stop. Each one gives an idea of the phrase to record, but you can maybe play around with it a bit and customize the words to your choosing, as long as they cover the instructions that are needed there. You can make your recording sounding even better, I noticed, by making sure you're in a noise-free environment and also by plugging in some headphones with a microphone. That's going to bypass the mic that's on your phone itself, which can result in boxy-sounding recordings if you do it that way. And once you have a full set of recordings, you just hit done and then name your voice recording and hit add. And now your navigation experience within Waze will be filled with, well, you or me. Oh, and maybe you think the rest of the world wants you to be their navigation buddy also? All you have to do is tap the share button next to the voice pack, and you can share that link. That will take them directly to your recording in the cloud so they can save it to their own Waze device and hear you all the time. Now, I can practically hear millions of you hoping I'll share my voice pack with you. So you can visit twit.to/JasonWaze to have me yelling directions at you while navigating using Waze on your own device. Whew, you're welcome. I'm Jason Howell. You can catch me on Tech News Today every weekday with Megan Maroney and on All About Android every Tuesday here on Twit.
You could also go to twit.to/LeoWaze to get my Waze. But I think Jason's is, he was shouting at you.
Yeah.
Here, I'll show you. Okay. Mine sounds more friendly. I can't remember.
We're ready to roll. Drive safe.
Yeah, that's nice, right?
Yeah.
Let's get started. Drive safe.
I think I'm pretty the friendly guy. Mm-hmm.
Directions you love from people you trust. Let's go.
That's my favorite.
It's kind of fun. You should make your own. And I tweeted mine earlier. And again, twit.to/LeoWaze. But really, you're going to want to make your own, right?
I don't know. I think I want to listen to you. Yeah. I think of you as my guiding star.
I feel like it'd be kind of fun to make some, like, you know, different voices and funny mm-hmm. ones and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Maybe we'll do that. It doesn't take that long to do it. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
All right. You can see we've arranged quite a few laptops in front of us here.
I don't even think this is all of them.
A little
forest. You can't even see all of them.
You can't. There you go. They're in three different kind of main categories. We've got some Microsoft Windows choices here. These are all the Microsoft laptops. We've got some choices from Apple, both Mac OS and iOS, the mm-hmm. iPad laptop. And then stuck in the middle here is kind of my choice, which is a Chromebook. This is the latest Chromebook from Samsung, the Chromebook Plus, which I like a lot. If we start by price, this is the least expensive. Chromebooks tend to range from $150 to about $500. This one's $450 with the ARM processor in it. If you want an Intel processor, which I don't really think is necessary, you can get the Chromebook Pro. That's $100 more. But I think this is a really nice laptop with a great screen. It's a touch screen. It will run Android apps, which makes Chrome OS a little bit more powerful. And it's got a real keyboard. Now, your daughter has been using iPads, I'm sure, for some time.
Yes, she's been using them for school, but now she's moving on to high school. And I don't think that the iPad is right for her, but I think that it probably is good for other high school students.
It just depends. In this case, we've got the 12.9-inch iPad Pro in a Logitech keyboard case, and to its left, the smaller 10.5-inch mm-hmm. iPad. I think you would want a Pro, wouldn't you? Because it works with a keyboard. Actually, they all work with a mm-hmm. keyboard, but it has that smart connector. It works with the Pencil, which you have to have the Pro to work with the Pencil. And it seems to be with iOS 11, they're going to have some more laptop-like features.
Yeah, there's the Files app. And I think it's gotten a little bit easier to work in Google Docs and Google Sheets, which is how a lot of schools work now.
Right.
Of course, it's not going to be as easy as it is in Chrome.
One of the things that's really changed is everybody's online all the time now. When the Chrome OS first came out, the first Chromebooks, I kind of poo-pooed them because it did require you to be online. It really was a computer designed to use the cloud. But nowadays, that seems pretty ubiquitous. Mm-hmm. There are not many places you can go in your day-to-day life when you're not online. Certainly in school, you're going to be almost always online. Yeah. My only concern about the iPads, besides the lack of a keyboard, I mean, they're great touch interface, and there's lots of educational apps on there. One of our student visitors, the youngest student visitor, is learning to program Swift using Swift Playgrounds, and that's mm-hmm. a really great way to learn how to program. There's other programs like Tinker, too,
right,
that are fantastic. But it doesn't come with a keyboard. If you add the keyboard, you're talking almost $1,000, right?
Yeah, $159, $169. I have a little MacGyver set up here where I use, on my 10.5 iPad, I use the Magic Keyboard, which you might already have sitting around. That's the Apple Magic Keyboard, plus just a little $100 canopy.
Stand. But it'll work with any Bluetooth keyboard. But the iPad itself starts at, what, $650?
$650. $800 it starts at for the 12.9. That's large.
And then you're going to add $100, $150 in keyboard. I think that's a pretty expensive solution for what is basically just a tablet. The Chromebook is generally under $500. Now, you could look at a Macintosh. We've got three different Macintoshes here. This is the one I would recommend, which is a MacBook Pro. This is a higher-end MacBook, but it doesn't have the touch bar. The touch bar adds significantly to the cost and I think does not add to functionality, at least not yet, even though there are more and more apps using it. I think looking down at a touch bar isn't that useful. I don't think a student especially needs the touch bar. And I found it impeded my touch typing. I kept hitting it with a pinky and things would launch. So that's actually the MacBook you're looking at right there. The MacBook Pro is probably what you want. Although you could get something a little bit. This starts at $1,299 without the touch bar. The MacBook also starts at $1,299. It's a little thinner and lighter. Also a great screen. And my problem with both the MacBook and the MacBook Pro is this keyboard. I really think Apple's made a mistake with this keyboard. Of all the keyboards we have here, it's the shortest travel, which means your fingers kind of bottom out when you're hitting that key. And I find that difficult to type on. Now, you may not, if you're a high school freshman, you may not care, right? Kids might be used to that.
They might, or they might not be used to anything. Yeah, this, like, starting high school might be the first time they're really doing a lot of typing, and they'll just, they won't remember all the days of those wonderful chiclet keyboards.
Right, and I may be such an old-timer that that's my problem, and it might be that a kid isn't going to notice the difference. I just would hate to type any length of time using these keyboards because they don't have the travel. Even a Chromebook has better travel. Now, there is a Macintosh, an older Macintosh here. This is the MacBook Air.
This
is the least expensive Macintosh Apple sells. It starts at $1,000. You were able to find a student discount down to, what, $850?
$850 for a brand new one. Well, it's not new. It's old hardware, but from the new part. And then $800 refurbished. So that's something that we could talk about, too.
If you're buying a refurbished Mac from Apple, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, one-year warranty. Yeah. Free shipping back and forth.
If you're buying refurbished from the original manufacturer and they cover it with a full warranty, I don't have a problem with that. But you'll notice you aren't going to save that much either. That's a $50 savings.
I know. It was, that was why. So I had decided, I had gotten advice from Renee Ritchie. Renee Ritchie will say MacBook Air all the way for college.
It's
kids.
Thin, it's light, it's got a better keyboard because it has the older keyboard. The negative on that is the screen resolution. It's the worst of anything here, including the iPads, the worst screen resolution.
So that's what he said, and I thought, who cares? She's 14, like, she can deal with it. But Jason Snell pointed out that kids are really used to having a higher screen resolution. They're used to streaming HD videos on their iPhones. And so they will probably use this as their TV.
Right.
And so if you're going to be spending that much money anyway, you know, they will pay attention to the resolution.
Yeah.
The other problem with the MacBook Air is, what is your kid going to do with it? Are they just going to type papers? Are they just going to do docs? My daughter likes to edit videos, and I bet a lot of kids also like to do that, and I bet they're asked to do that in school pretty often. And when she edits videos, she uses my MacBook Pro.
Right.
I mean, that's what she uses. She can't do it on any other device.
She could do it on an iPad. Actually, there's pretty good video editing, but I wouldn't want to do it on a Chromebook.
She could. Yeah, she does a lot of, like, HD video editing. Like, could she do that on the iPad, like GoPro videos?
Yeah, she could do very good job with editing. It comes with iMovie, and there's other third-party apps that are very good. There's no Final Cut, but I think video editing on an iPad actually is very intuitive and easy, and it's a high-resolution, high-quality screen on the Pro.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I think you could do that. But I like a keyboard, and I do think you're right, the MacBook Pro, if you think she's going to be doing the editing. This is part of the problem of buying a student a laptop, because you don't know ahead of time what their interests will be or what they're going to want to do when she's just entering high school or they're just entering college. If you can get some direction about what they might want to do with it, that might help you decide. We left out over here on the right the Windows machines, and I think Windows 10 nowadays, I don't think kids have the same kind of prejudice as we might have had about Mac versus Windows versus iOS. I think Windows 10 is actually a very credible, solid operating system. One of the best things about Windows is there's a huge ecosystem. You can get a Windows laptop for under $200, all the way up to $5,000 or more, and there's some really nice choices out there. These are the three that Microsoft makes, and actually we got all three that Microsoft, well, we're missing the studio, but these are the three laptops Microsoft makes, and I think these are very nice. They tend to be a little pricier. You can save money by not getting on Microsoft. You should look at Asus, Acer, Dell. I love Lenovo. Those are a little bit pricier, but they make very nice ones. But these are pretty sweet. This is the laptop. This is called the Surface Laptop. I think a lot of students would like the fact that you can get it in three different colors, not just silver. Notice everything else is very silver except for the iPads. I love this burgundy color. And this is kind of weird, and I don't know how well it would wear in a student's hand, but it has a polyester, a plastic fabric coating. The fabric is called Alcantara. You might have encountered it in the headliner of your car. That's mostly where it's used. But it does give this a nice kind of soft, comfortable feel. I think Microsoft intended this laptop, which starts at $1,000, for the executive. It's very thin and light. It's kind of their version of an ultrabook. It's all aluminum. And this is something you're going to want to think about a little bit. It has a dearth of connectors. Now, Apple's famous for lack of connectors. Mm-hmm. This has a USB connector, a DisplayPort connector, and on the other side, an SD card reader, and that's it. And it also, actually, I'm sorry, that's not an SD card reader. I always get fooled by that. That's the Windows connector, and that's how it powers the laptop. That's another reason I'm not crazy about Microsoft. They've chosen not to put the Type 3 USB connectors on here, and they power it with a proprietary charger. Almost everything else here, I think, except for the iOS devices, which use Lightning, everything else here, and the MacBook Air, which uses MagSafe, but everything else, well, in the middle here, these all use Type-C charging, USB Type-C charging. Well, I like that. I like those Type-C connectors.
As long as you brought up MagSafe, that's another consideration. I mean, if you have a klutzy all over the place teenager, the MagSafe, which is still only only on
the
MagSafe Air, MacBook Air, so that's the connector that keeps it from pulling the whole system down when you pull down. But they've done. I mean, it's not easy to pull down your the new ones either.
I think Microsoft's making a little bit of a mistake focusing on this proprietary Windows connector. It can do more. Maybe that's why they do it. This is a Surface Pro. This is Microsoft's kind of equivalent of an iPad because it's a standalone, if I detach it, a standalone tablet, which then you can buy an optional a keyboard for. The keyboard, believe it or not, I prefer this keyboard to the MacBook keyboard. It's still short travel, but it feels a little bit more comfortable than the MacBook keyboard. Everybody agrees that one thing Microsoft does very well is screens. This Surface Pro screen is among the best screens out there. They're also unusual in another respect. For some reason, Microsoft likes to ship screens that aren't wide, but are a 3x2 aspect ratio. And I actually like that for schoolwork, but it might be something that your daughter may not like if she wants to watch movies or edit movies. She might want a widescreen laptop. This is the Surface Book. Similar idea. It's a laptop, but you can detach the screen. Effectively, the screen is the same as a Surface Pro. This is really expensive. It starts at $1,500. It goes all the way up to $3,200.
Now, would you recommend getting that one used? I mean, because that was your old Surface Book that you gave to me. Like, there might be people like you that want to get rid of. Is there any? Is it like a used car? Should I not buy?
I wouldn't buy used at this point, unless it's refurbished by the original manufacturer. Because really, those aren't generally used. They were open box. Somebody bought them. Mm-hmm. State of California and others will not let you resell something once it's been opened. So they have to put it in the outlet store and sell it. Dell also has an excellent outlet store where you can save a few, $100. You save $100. That's a good deal. You know, maybe 10% off. You should also consult with the school because many schools have student discounts. Mm-hmm. And I would always, especially if your kid's going to college, I would always ask the school, if you know what department your child's going to be in or talk to somebody at the school, about what they recommend. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be able to get deals. There's a Windows deal. The Macintoshes have deals as well. You're going to get deals, but you're also going to get some advice as to what hardware would be good. I think all things being equal, my strong choice, because of price alone, is a Chromebook. I think these are very capable computers. They have great keyboards. They're easy to use. Most Chromebooks now have touch, which is a fantastic feature. This one comes with a stylus, so if your daughter likes to draw, she can draw with this. What this is not good for is video editing, photographs, that kind of thing. But it's great for a homework machine. And in fact, this is our son's homework machine for his freshman year. We borrowed it from Michael. Thank you, Michael, for letting us use this. And I think this is a great machine for a starter. And one of the advantages of making it $450 is if you do down the road want to, if your daughter says, "Oh, I'm going to do video editing," you can then. You haven't blown the budget. Maybe you get a year or two out of this, and then you can look at a higher end laptop down the road. You already know she wants to do video editing.
I do know that, and also it's a private school, and they require either Windows or Mac.
They don't give you an option for a Chromebook.
You can't, and I think they must have software that they use, you know, monitoring software or something that doesn't.
That's why you want to be careful, because and do ask the school, because they may say, no, she's going to need to use a program that runs on Mac OS or Windows. In that case, I bet you're going to have to bite the bullet a little bit, because it's $300 more than that MacBook Air, but it's more than $300 more powerful, in my opinion. I would look at the MacBook Pro. This is a 13-inch no-touch bar, so you save some money there, and I think this is everything she would need if she can stand the keyboard. It's the only thing that deters me, but I think she'll be fine with that. Let her try it.
Well, PC guy 8088 made a good suggestion in the chat room, which was have them pay for some of it. So, I mean, if they're going into high school, they probably, she babysits. She has a job. So
you could say that. You could say, "Honey, we'll buy you a MacBook Air," or if you kick in an extra $300,
right,
we'd be glad to get you a MacBook Pro.
Well, also because he made the very valid point that they're going to treat it better if they pay for part of it.
So. Skin in the game.
And then, of course, if you're watching this, you probably have a laptop that you want to hand down. You want to get yourself, maybe you want to get yourself the new one, and hand down your lower one. I think that we do, even though we do have a lot of laptops here, I think we do have a significant hole of those Windows machines that are not made by Microsoft that are around the same price.
The problem is there's thousands of them. It is the most rich ecosystem, and in a way that's the strength of it, but it makes it hard for you as an end user to choose. I think the Dell XPS 13 is a really great choice, a beautiful screen. It's lightweight, it's powerful. Windows 10 is a very good choice, and because it has touch, I think a lot of students who are used to touch with their smartphones will be more comfortable with Windows 10 than they are with a non-touch Macintosh. I know we've probably done short shrift to the iPad Pro. I think in time, that might end up being a great laptop choice for some students, especially the 10.5-inch. But I don't think it's quite there yet. I think we have to wait and see how iOS 11 matures and which apps come along, especially educational apps, to take advantage of the more laptop-like form factor. I like the Chromebook. There's one other reason a Chromebook's good for a student. You can't really play any games. There's no Minecraft. And that's not such a bad thing, is it? That's maybe one reason why your kid wants to buy a Windows machine.
Yeah, probably.
Much better game.
Yeah.
Much better game.
Yes.
I know we haven't really solved your problem.
No, and
I
also
you've got a lot of information now.
I also need to get her a graphing calculator, too. So
you know, why do they still make kids buy graphing calculators?
I don't know.
That's
it's
crazy.
Math, but I got a lot of good advice on Twitter.
You can do it all on a computer.
They still have a TI-89. I think maybe that's what I'm supposed to get.
The graphing calculator.
Yeah, for mathematicians. I guess maybe because they don't want kids taking out, they want it separate. I don't know. But I was excited to know that there's still the TI still holds the market on the graphing calculator.
I've got four TI-89s. We'll lend you one.
Good.
I kept buying them for Abby and Henry because I don't know why. Because they need them. I think it's the testing also. They can bring those into the
maybe,
testing.
Maybe, yeah.
Hey, you know what we should talk to? Some kids from Italy. There's a different kind of environment there, I bet. Joining us right now, some students from Varese, Italy. Here, why don't you go first?
Okay.
And I'll introduce them. They're on the last stop of their coding code camp through Silicon Valley. They were at Apple. They got a great tour of Apple. And Deval O'Neill is here. She's the founder of Coding. Tell us, go ahead, stand up, Deval, and we can talk to you. Tell us a little bit about what Coding is all about.
Okay, so Coding is an organization that I set up about 18 months ago. I started my world of tech, getting into the world of tech, making apps for Irish dancers.
Wait a minute, you mean like Michael Flatley, the Lord of the Dance, that kind of thing?
Exactly, yes.
And what do they need apps for?
Well, a lot of the traditional Irish dances are getting lost because they're not being danced so often anymore. So I thought by creating an app,
could
help people to, you know, learn them even if they don't have teachers who know those steps.
Did you have experience writing apps yourself before?
No, that was my first time.
And you thought, I can do it? We can get these kids to do it?
Yes, thank you. Thanks to David Book from using his
Here's David right here.
Using Buzz Touch, I was able to.
That's great. And these kids are what ages?
They are aged between 10 and 17.
Okay. Yeah. And they do it during the summer, or is this part of their school curriculum as well?
It's not yet part of the school curriculum in all of the schools. Yeah. They're starting to get it more and more into the schools. I'm doing it after school and at the weekends.
That's great.
So, yeah, it's really taking off and really enjoying it.
You want to talk to one of the kids, Megan?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead and let's say hi. They seem like a nice bunch. They don't think anybody will bite.
Let's start with you.
One of them said, no. Who's the best English speaker in the bunch besides Sebastian?
Not you.
Sebastian's, come here. Give me the mic. Okay. Sebastian's a very good speaker. Sebastian, you're somebody's son, though, right?
Yes.
Are you in Kodang as well?
Yes.
Oh, good. And how old are you?
10.
Wow. Do you write apps?
No, but me and a friend, we like make our own private games.
Oh, that's fun.
I write the code. He's very good in art, and so he does the art.
You told me that you're learning Swift.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks to the Swift Playgrounds app, I'm self-teaching myself how to code in Swift. It's very, very near to writing JavaScript code.
And that's what most of these guys are learning is web technologies, JavaScript, HTML, CSS, and all that. Who's the best coder in the bunch? Is one of you really... Is it that guy over there? He looks like he's a good coder. Maybe it's because he's wearing glasses. I don't know. How about you? They're all very shy. Anyway, welcome to the U.S. When do you guys go back?
We're departing tomorrow morning, so we're finishing on a high with you.
Well, I don't know. You saw Apple. You got to go inside the secret environment. I bet that was.
A big shout-out to the folks at Apple and at Stanford University and at Facebook for making this trip.
Really nice.
Really a success.
Deval, thank you for visiting us. Thank you, David, for bringing this troop. And I hope you guys had a great time in the United States, and you'll come back and visit us. Actually, forget that. I'm coming to visit you. Let's take the whole show to Varese. What do you say? All right. Andiamo. Isn't that what you say, I think? Thank you. It's very nice to have you here. I love it that we get these school groups come by and visit. I don't know how we got on that list, but I'm glad we are. It's a really nice bunch. All right. Let's see here. Oh, it's time for a call for help. Let's do it. We have a recorded question from Steven in Fontana, California. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I'm out here in the middle of the country off of I-40 in Texas.
Whoa.
I had a quick question about duplicate files. In my youth, I thought I knew it all, backups and recovery. And since then, I've ended up with my network attached storage drive full of, I would say half of it is probably duplicate at this point. I have 2 and 3 copies of photos in my iPhoto library and music. I've digitalized movies and half my movie collection seems to be doubled. I've tried Genie duplicate remover. I've tried all kinds of things and I can't figure out how to get everything removed. Maybe you guys can help me out. I'd really appreciate it. Thanks.
I think Steve, is he talking to us from his truck?
Yeah.
That was awesome. Yeah. I hope he wasn't driving. It looked like he pulled over.
Yeah.
You know, he was using, truckers now use these Blue Parrot cellular Bluetooth speakers or headsets, and the noise cancellation is amazing. Mm. So he could have been driving.
Yeah.
It would sound really good. Well, thank you, Stephen, for that question. You have some suggestions?
I do. Well, first of all, duplicate files is one of those things where there's a lot of apps that are just kind of garbagey.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things where you are sort of feeling desperate, and you're just like, oh, I'll download anything.
It's a universal need.
Yes.
That isn't perfectly well solved.
Right.
Yeah.
So I had gone through a few that, you know, are expensive or full of ads or, you know, malware, that kind of thing. What I really like is Gemini and Gemini 2, and it is not free. It's $20, but if you have a real problem, I think it is worth it. So, and it's super easy and it does a lot of cool things. So it's, you know, super easy to just press.
Boy, the interface is very simple.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just a big plus sign in a circle.
And I've actually...
Now, this is Mac only, we should say.
Mm-hmm.
He says he has some dupes on his NAS as well. I'll help you with those
in
a little bit.
Well, you know what? You can also clean out your Dropbox. That's a problem that I have. Like, you can put your Dropbox file in there. So let's do that.
And actually, Stephen, if you can mount your NAS files, which I'm sure you can, your NAS folders on the Mac, that would work with them as well,
mm-hmm.
probably.
So just scan for duplicates.
and scan in progress. It's very quick. It's going
through.
I like the
UI. I like the radar screen.
Yeah, and its sound is good, too. I don't know if you probably can't hear that, but it has some good sound effects.
Looking for duplicates.
Well. Wow. So then I can review the duplicates. You're not just going to say, sure, yeah, delete all my photos from since when my kids were babies. Who cares? So you can review it. So I have this video here, Slow Children at Play, this video from 2014.
That's not nice to say your children are slow.
Yes, they're slow. Slow children
slow
at play.
Get it?
So I can search in
That's
here.
Funny.
And it was like,
shows you both places.
Yes.
Okay.
And then, okay, I want to delete one of those. And I can go through. And you can also do a smart delete where it just deletes it all and you don't have to really worry about
it. And just hope that it's right.
Right. And then you just hit remove and it's, removed.
That's one of the problems with deduping is, of course, that you don't want to remove the one copy of something you have. And a duplicator doesn't always know. A good duplicator, and I'm sure Gemini is one of these, is going to use several techniques to make sure that it's deleting actual duplicates and not files that have just the same name and same creation date. The best way to do it, of course, is to look into the file and create a hash or some sort of representation of the contents of the file. Most of the time it will be a hash. And compare that hash with another file that you think is a duplicate. And unless they match identically, don't delete one of them. You may, for instance, if you're a photographer, you probably have the original photo and then any editing you did, a crop or you took out the red eye. Those aren't duplicates. And even though they may be named the same, even kind of look the same, a program like Gemini should be smart enough to say, well, they're not identical, so I'm going to keep both of them. And I presume Gemini.
Yes, it uses 12 different parameters to tell what it is.
It's very important.
It also does. So if you're like me, like you take 70 pictures or, you take 10 pictures of the same thing to get the right one, and then it's just all uploaded automatically. This also looks at similar photos. So if you see this.
That's an option.
Yes. So you can look at this. There's this family
picture. You might want that.
That looks slightly different than that one. Right. Like, maybe someone's smiling.
Oh, that's interesting.
Need that one. And that one, and here's the edited version of that one, and so it'll look at slightly different pictures.
It's always risky to use these dedupes because if it makes a mistake, it's going to delete something.
Right.
So my strong recommendation, and this probably isn't practical for Stephen, who sounds like he has so much duplication, is make a backup. Your best bet would be go folder by folder, make a copy of the folder, then dedupe it. Or get a cheap external hard drive, copy everything to that, then dedupe it, just in case. Because that one picture you really want to, of Grandma Vinny and the turkey, if you deleted it, you might, you remember, I'm sure. that you want to make sure you don't accidentally delete something you really want.
Now,
Gemini sounds great.
Yeah, Anthony found one that's a little cheaper. It's called Duplicate File Finder, and he tried that. And that one is free to try. And then we're showing that on his screen.
I love
too.
How much energy these companies. It's so easy to do the deduping.
Yeah.
They just put all the energy into the UI.
Well, right. So
why not?
Yeah.
Oh, this is nice because it does show you kind of how much is used by these things. I like that. So that's called
Free Duplicate File Finder.
Duplicate File Finder.
And I think it's $5. Okay. Is that how much it was? It's free to try.
There's a very similar set of programs like this on the Windows side. It's a universal problem, frankly. And the solution, though, is not that complicated. But I like it when a program really is careful and makes sure these are not, these are not just, files that look alike. These are really duplicates. And in fact, that's a hard thing to do well. For instance, if you have a music file, it's the same song, but one's a live performance and one's not. If you look at hashes, that's going to be, they're not going to look duplicate, but in every other respect, they might. So you got to really be careful. Good question. Thank you, Stephen. If you want us to answer your tech questions, I think you could do that. Here's how.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
newscreensavers@twit.tv. Megan, of course, will be back Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, for TNT, and you and I are going to do iOS today on Tuesday, our new time, 9 a.m. Pacific time. That's noon Eastern, 1600 UTC, and we're going to do science.
I know. I got inspired by doing that research into the solar probe. And so, yeah, maybe we'll talk again about that app where you can upload your pictures from the eclipse and lots of other science apps. If you have science app suggestions, send me Megan at twit.tv.
I should have brought it in because we were showing the iPads. I just got Logitech's new Slim Combo case. And I will show that off as well. There's some good stuff about it. There's also some negatives. And we'll help you make that choice. That's Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific on the show. I did want to show you, you mentioned Windows. We didn't show the variety of other Windows laptops. This is my Windows laptop, the one I use day in, day out. The reason I don't recommend it for a student is, as configured, this is almost $3,000. It's a very expensive laptop. But this is my work laptop. This is the one I use all the time. So, you know, I wouldn't buy this for a student, but this is a Lenovo ThinkPad, and this is the second generation of the Yoga. The Yoga is what we call a two-in-one. In the Windows world, there's a lot of kinds of laptop. There's the Ultrabooks, which are basically MacBook Air clones, literally stealing the idea of MacBook Air. There's the tablet ones, which detach. They have a detachable keyboard. But I'm really, those sometimes called convertibles, I'm really fond of what they call the two-in-ones, because these can this can be a tablet, still has a keyboard on the back, but it can be a tablet, but it can also be a tent if you want to. I use this on the airplane when we travel to watch movies. I think that's a great way to do it. And it can also be a laptop with a variable angle hinge. I really think they've done a nice job. The reason this one is so expensive, it has an OLED screen, you know, like those fancy TVs. And it is a very accurate, very high quality screen that also has touch. And I'm really fond of this particular screen. This is the Lenovo ThinkPad Yoga. It has a good trackpad. It has the very famous ThinkPad nub in there. They call that the track point. And the other reason I had to get this is all of these connectors on the side. Two Type-C, three USB 3.1 connectors. It's got on the it's got a full-size HDMI connector. Unfortunately, a little bit of a proprietary Ethernet connector, but it does have a hardwired Ethernet connector as long as you get the adapter for that. And I love it that there's a pen, just like on the Surface, but it doesn't just kind of hang off via a magnet. It actually fits into the body of the Lenovo. So this is an active pen, pressure sensitive and all of that stuff. So I think this is a pretty nice, a fingerprint reader as well. It's a pretty nice Windows laptop, but not, maybe a graduate student.
Maybe
a graduate student, but probably not for the high school student. We're going to do the mailbag in just a second, but you know, Brian Burnett, he just cleaned out his PC last week. Remember, he got all the dust bunnies out? Mm-hmm. Now that it's running well, he thought, let's overclock it. He's crazy. We'll show you how.
This is Brian Burnett from Know How, and I'm going to show you how to do some simple overclocking to squeeze a little bit more juice out of your PC. Now, back in the old days, it used to be quite hard to do overclocking. But these days, it's gotten a little bit more simple. You can even download software, depending on your CPU, and do some overclocking without even having to go into the BIOS. But for me, I like to tweak my overclocking settings through the BIOS, and I'll show you how to do that. But before we get started, there's a few software programs we'll need to download first. CPU-Z is a great one to download. This way, we'll be able to keep track of our CPU frequency and multiplier. And then the next one that we'll need is HW Monitor, because we'll be needing to keep an eye on our CPU temps. Finally, you'll want to download Prime 95, which will allow us to run our CPU at 100%, and then we can test stability over time. To get started with our overclocking, you're going to want to navigate to the BIOS. Now, right now I have everything set to default. My target CPU frequency is 3200. I have a AMD X6 Phenom processor, which comes with an unlocked multiplier. But even if yours doesn't, that doesn't mean you can't change the CPU frequency. Now, as you can see, if I change the multiplier from the stock 16 to 18, you can see the CPU frequency jump up along with the RAM frequency. In this case, I've played with my computer settings a few times, so I know that if I do 18 as my CPU multiplier and have a reference clock of 200, that'll put my computer at 3600 megahertz with a DRAM frequency of 1333, and I've been able to run that stable in the past. But as you are tweaking your own system, do small multipliers or small bumps in the reference clock, and then go back into Windows and see if it's stable after that. Once you've tweaked your numbers to a small increase, it's time to go back into Windows and open up CPU-Z and HW Monitor. Now at idle, my computer is at 28 degrees Celsius, which is pretty cool. And now my core speed on my CPU is 3600 megahertz with a multiplier of 18. Next, I'm going to open up Prime 95, which will allow me to run my CPU at 100%. And then this way, we'll be able to test our overclock, see where our temps are at, and also how long our PC can stay stable with that clock. So I know I can run this clock all day long, and my temps won't go above 50 degrees Celsius. Now, with this small amount of overclocking, I have seen about 10 to 15 frames per second increase on across the board on all my games. Video renders a little bit more quickly, but overclocking like this will never get you the gains as, say, upgrading a hardware component, like upgrading your CPU or GPU. But this is a great way to get started with overclocking and get small gains for an older PC that you might want to hang on to a little bit longer. This has been Brian Burnett from KnowHow. Thanks for watching.
Overclocking. It's not just for kids anymore.
Who are those young whippersnappers overclocking at the beginning?
With liquid nitrogen. Crazy. Yeah. That was on the old screen save.
Overclock a CPU, and that's just way too long. So we grabbed our P4, the top of the line.
The Pentium Intel 4 P4 we were overclocking.
6 gigahertz.
And there's Patrick, Pentium for some 4, reason, hiding under the table. Get up, Patrick. Oh, my God. Nitrogen.
Is that a measure? A
Dewar? Liquid.
Yeah, I don't think it's a measure, but it's a particular type of container.
Oh, that's the Dewar he's holding right there.
Yeah.
And we're really... gonna... Now, I got to warn everybody, before you start doing this at home, it's very important to get the protective headgear, so I'm going to put that on.
I got
choppers!
And very important to wear your protective headgear. And Patrick, by the way, last time we didn't have the elk gloves. We now have the gloves made out of elk hide that are designed to protect him. Those will freeze solid like in 3 seconds. That's not going to protect
you. These are welding gloves, but they're right. The thickest gloves we had.
So liquid nitrogen is how
this is
cold?
This is how, is I don't know how the lawyers ever let us do this. That's just crazy.
192 degrees?
Yeah. Button. We can get some liquid nitrogen. I know where to get it. Hey, I really want to thank the kids and the adults from Kodang and Derval O'Neill. She's the founder of Kodang for visiting us with David and Katrina and the kids Davide, Lorenzo, Sebastian, Bianca, David, Paolo, Mattia, and Justine. Their parents are watching even though it's 2 a.m, right? Yeah, so we want to make sure we said everybody's name. And your kids have been wonderful. They've been really fun, and it's been a great time having you. So thank you. Thank you for visiting. It's time, Megan. Thank you for visiting.
Oh, thank you.
I hope you'll come back.
I will, maybe even Monday.
It's time for the mail thing, our Screensavers mailbag. And I was really hoping there'd be some cannoli in here. I could say, take the cannoli, leave the mail. Mm-hmm. But no, there's just email. Actually, there's a recorded email. So let's start with that one, watch. Or not.
Hello, Leo and Megan. This is Tom here.
Hi, Tom.
I'm hoping you can help me find a better way to do this.
Okay.
For the month of July, I've decided not to use my PC unless absolutely necessary. I can do everything on my iPhone.
Oh.
I can do it on my PC, pretty much.
Yeah.
But I like to send voice messages over email. I don't really like the voice memos app on the iPhone. I have one app I use. It used to be called Dropbox. Now it's called something else, and I use that for my journal. I need something else simple that I can use to send voice messages over email. So if you know of anything,
I love that idea.
Thank you. And keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you, Thomas. Of course, there are a lot of ways to record audio on a Mac. I use Amadeus Pro, which is not professional, but it's a like $50 paid recorder. But we have something that would work with your iPhone, with your iPad, that would let you record files, and you could then take those files and email them. And I think you introduced me to it.
Yeah, just press record.
It's on my watch, too.
It's great for if you're doing, you know, little casual interviews or if you want to secretly record someone so that you can replay their conversation later.
It's got a big button. Are you doing that right now? Are you recording conversations for later?
If I told you, it wouldn't be a secret.
Uh-huh.
It's for the memoir.
That may be illegal in some states. Do check with local authorities before you record people without their permission. But if I wanted to record an email, I could do it from my watch right now. Hey there, this is Leo, and I'm using my Apple Watch, which actually has a surprisingly good microphone, given it's just a wristwatch, to record this email. Thanks for listening, and see you next time. I don't know what that means. So now I can save it, and I can actually...
You probably have it set to save automatically in iCloud.
It's sent to my iPhone, and it's also automatically sent to the iCloud, which means you could take it on your iPhone as an attachment and send it. If you open Just Press Record on your iPhone, you can actually send it via email using the share button.
You know what they do that's new? They'll transcribe for you as well.
Oh, that's
probably
cool.
Not on the watch, but on the phone. Can you see this, Alex? So you can... Hello, I'm recording this on my iPhone, which
nice.
You can't see, but... Soon
yeah,
you'll
see,
be able
he's
to
got a camera right there pointed at that
be
guy.
Be able to
you don't have
see
to,
this.
You don't have to
recording.
Move it closer. He can zoom.
Wow, that's amazing. So then, let's see if it transcribes. We'll see how it does.
I wonder if
Hello,
they're doing that.
Hello, there it goes. I'm recording this on...
Oh, my gosh. So it's probably using Siri to...
I might have stopped the recording earlier, all right. But yeah. So...
So actually, that's a great feature because then you can send a transcript and the audio... And you'd get the best of both
Look
worlds.
Look at that transcription.
At that.
That's pretty
it's
good.
It's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Okay.
So $5. Not
just
free.
Press record.
$5 on all your... When you decide to use your PC, your laptop again, you can use it on there too.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. And yeah, really probably an easier way to send email. I should just from now on, I'm just going to record my my responses to you.
Yeah, probably. Just so I can get your mood. I don't understand what he has against voice memos, though. I would like to know that. What's wrong with voice memos?
Yeah, that works fine.
I mean, if you need transcriptions, it's not going to do that, but...
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of ways to record, many of them free. Mm-hmm. You have... Did I give you an email?
No.
What did I do with it?
I didn't... I think...
Oh,
did you take
it?
There they are.
Is this it? Here.
Oh, okay. I'll read
All yours.
One.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Says Charlie. I just recently downloaded the iOS 11 beta to my iPhone. Congratulations, Charlie. But there are some apps that I really like that won't work because they are 32-bit. How can I go back to iOS 10? Yeah, Flappy Bird, for example.
Well, you and I both bit the bullet a week and a half ago and installed iOS 11. Mm-hmm. You actually did it earlier on that.
I did it on this old thing.
And, at first, I thought, oh, this is great. It works with everything. But I have occasionally run into a few things. Flappy Bird's one. Mm-hmm. I have a Shure Motive microphone. That's how I was going to record the Waze sounds. I couldn't use it on iOS 11. It crashed. Mm-hmm. But I could use it on my iPhone. So this is a word of why, a word to the warning, a word of warning, a word to the a wise word for the warning of the wise people.
Mm-hmm.
Don't. Okay? No, don't do it on your only device or a device you have to have. Fortunately, because I had an iPhone that was still in iOS 10, I was able to use that microphone. But if I had upgraded everything to iOS 11, I'd be out of luck. So it's just always with beta software, you got to be careful.
And do back up first.
This is going to work because you backed up first, right?
Because I worked. Yeah, got to back up first before you do it. So,
Apple says that, but you know how people are.
Right.
I didn't.
Okay. So
we ignore it. There's a reason. The only way you can go backwards is if you made a backup.
Right, exactly. So the Apple gives you the steps. Basically, you have to put it in recovery mode, which is holding down the power button and holding down the home button at once. And
well, it's even more complicated than that because to get into, you're going to go into DFU mode, or you're just going to
what?
Yeah,
what
I think
do you do to recovery mode?
Yeah.
But it's more than...
You have to hold them down for 5...
Yeah, you have to...
5 seconds and then 10 seconds, and there's a special method. Did you do that?
No, I didn't. I just
reset?
I just held them down for
And
a
you
bunch
kept
of...
holding it down, and
I kept
eventually
it
what
down.
Happened?
Nothing.
Nothing? Nothing happened.
But then I hooked it up to you hook it up to iTunes, and then...
Where you've made a backup.
Right. And then and that's going to be the latest operating system, right? Because you don't have the backup... It's just going to install 10.3.3, not 11. Because if you did upgrade to iOS 11, you didn't get that through iTunes. You got through that through a special
However,
way.
if you've backed up since you went to iOS 11, you have to go back farther in time to a previous backup before iOS 11.
Exactly. So you can't. So then you hook it up to your laptop, open up iTunes, and then go through
Or your desktop if you have a desktop.
Yes. Open up iTunes. It can be a Windows machine even. It doesn't have to be Mac.
Whatever you backed that up to originally.
Right.
Before you went to iOS 11.
Right.
Then, in other words, long answer short, just restore your backup.
Yes, restore your backup. You know how to do that. Follow the instructions. But it did not work for me. It just said...
What?
At first, it didn't work. I restored my backup, and then I tried to install... I wanted to do fresh.
Right.
I want to do fresh. Every time I like to install a new operating system.
That's a question. Could you do fresh if you didn't have a backup? Could you? I mean, the backup brings back all the apps, but if you didn't backup,
you could do.
You could wipe it and just go back to the current version of the operating
system.
Yes,
you go back and then it's. But
install
it didn't.
10.
But it didn't. It just went to activation.
We saw
error.
You had an activation error.
Yeah,
but it's working now.
It's working now.
Spontaneously.
So, yeah. Now it's Now I have to go fresh from where it says.
This is the kill switch that Apple installed a few generations ago on iPhones and iPads that worked very effectively. Kept people from stealing. It was a big market in stolen iPhones. Kept people from stealing iPhones. But in order for it to work, you'll have to log into your iCloud and you know, you can't, in other words, that's to keep somebody from taking your iPad and making it theirs. It has to activate and all
but
that.
But if they have your iCloud password, they can do it.
They can
but
do
that's
it.
Two things to know.
Right.
So it didn't work several times, and it was very confusing, and I was very worried that I'd ruined this iPad Pro.
That would be a very bad thing, because that's the 12.9-inch in gold.
But in gold.
Maybe it's worth even more.
But then I just kept at it, and I kept trying. Okay. And
so
then,
you may have that.
Yeah, so keep trying.
I must be wrong. I guess you could just press it and hold it until it goes into recovery mode. But then there's a further recovery mode called the disk firmware update that requires a fairly complicated sequence of pushes and timing. If that doesn't work, that was what I was going to do to yours. That's the next step to do that. Because what will then pop up is a message on the screen, now connected to iTunes. You never saw that message, right?
No.
Now connected to iTunes. Mm-hmm. So that's DFU. And my recommendation is to go to YouTube and search for a video that shows you, because you're going to want to follow along to get the timing just right. It has to be like 5 seconds here, 10 seconds there. And it's much easier if you're just following a video. If you get the white apple, you didn't do it right. You're going to have to do it again. You're looking for that screen that says plug into iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That might have saved that. I don't know.
Yeah.
We have had activation issues moving a lap. We have an iPad, for instance, that John had in his drawer there, and we don't know who the hell's iPad it is, so we can't unlock it. We've tried every password we know. So that's going to require a call to Apple. And then they're going to say, well, it doesn't sound like a crook. Okay. We'll deactivate.
We just have an iPad sitting around? You don't know who it belongs to?
It was, I don't know. I think it probably was... I don't know. It's an iPad Air. It's a black one. It was in the drawer somewhere.
Hmm.
You know, when you know, people leave, it might have been Sarah's old one. It might have been my old one. I don't know.
This place is just littered with old iPads.
No, don't say that. You know why? Because then people are going to ask for them.
This
was the one. It was one. There's no others, right?
And you can't.
There's
work
no other unused iPads. It's not...
But just know with any of this, like Apple says again and again, this is a beta, try it at your own risk.
Right,
and I was kind of scared, but I think I'm out of the woods now with this.
That table is made of old iPads. You probably didn't notice that.
Yes.
This entire thing.
I am actually made of old iPads.
That's why she's the host of iOS Today every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific. We'll see you then. And, of course, every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific for TNT. Thank you, Megan Maroney, filling in on short notice. I really appreciate it. Thanks once again to our visitors from Varese. I want to go to Varese. Varese, is it near the Swiss border? Is it that far north? Wow. Oh, what fun. The food and the chocolate must be phenomenal up there. Thank you for visiting us, folks, from Codeng, Codeeng. What's the website if people want to know more?
My Facebook page, Codeng Varese.
Codeng Varese on Facebook. Thanks to all of you for being here. We do this show every Saturday afternoon, about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2200 UTC. So not that late in Italy. Middle of the night. No big deal. If you want to watch live, do join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. You can be part of the kids in the back of the class kibitzing, throwing spitballs, mocking my clothing. That's fine. We love that. And if you want to be in studio... You're always welcome, no matter where in the world you're from. Just email tickets at twit.tv, and we'd love to have you. We'll put some chairs out for you. If you can't watch live, if you can't be here in studio or watch on the live stream, you can always get on-demand versions of the show. They're available at twit.tv/NSS. But you know the best thing to do is to subscribe. That way you won't miss an episode. You'll get every single one of them. You'll get up and you'll go to work on Monday and you'll go, wow, what's this on my phone? A new screensavers. That's what we want. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.
Yay, that is it.